Second part and final of session 95. Let's talk here about inner protection. Let's begin. In the last episode, we started this session talking about mostly ritual cleansing, which took us about 18 or so questions, and they were all a sort of standalone discussion about ritual cleansing of a house when they were moving into a different location. And so Don started asking Ra questions about the house and if they had to do some cleaning or preparation for the Ra contact, and we had a whole discussion on that. Here we're gonna go and continue the session, but go into a different line of questionings, which is going to be a little bit varied and sort of miscellaneous from the archetypical mind. Not much to discuss on that, but still something that allowed me to aptly title this video Inner Protection, which is something that I want to discuss in detail as possible. And we'll get to that, but let's start with the first question that I have, which is where we left last episode. And this is question 18, where Don says, "Thank you. A question has been asked, which I'll ask at this time. In processing the catalyst of dreams..." Oh, let me make a pause here, right? There's a period. "In processing the catalyst of dreams, is there a universal language of the unconscious mind which may be used to interpret the meaning of dreams? Or does each entity have a unique language of its unconscious mind which it may use to interpret the meaning of dreams?" So we're going back to dreams for one question. Ra says, "There is what might be called a partial vocabulary of the dreams due to the common heritage of all mind-body-spirit complexes. Due to each entity's unique incarnational experiences, there is an overlay which grows to be a larger and larger portion of the dream vocabulary as the entity gains experience." So Don's question is if there is a sort of universal language, right, that exists in terms of how the unconscious produces the dreams and how we interpret them, right? In other words, is there a structure, just like there is a structure to the mind, is there a structure for dream, a structuring of dreams, right? A pattern, something set. And Ra does give the concession that there is a partial vocabulary that we all have in common, but there are deeper and deeper greater and greater nuances in terms of our individuality. So let's dissect this as easy as possible. So dreaming is just another state of mind. The mind can have, or actually awareness can have, different states of manifestation, creation, whatever you want to call it, simply experience. I rather go for the word experience. Awareness can have all kinds of experiences. We are aware of what we call the waking state, the dreaming state, the deep sleep state, and that's basically it. There's the Turiya state, which I won't discuss now, but it's basically the waking state, fully awaken. It's not something complicated, but again, I won't go into the details. In the dreaming state, awareness has a different experience, and it's experiencing, in essence, a sort of recapitulation of what is happening in the waking state, possibly connection with other parts of the universe, of reality as a whole. This is why there are so many types of dreams, and trance states, and all of this belongs to the dream state. Everything that has to do with time space belongs to dream state. Okay, so again, we can further subcategorize dreams into prophetic and pre-incarnational or other incarnations and so on. It doesn't matter. The thing is that we all possess the capacity, awareness possesses the capacity to experience itself in space-time, which is this physical reality, and also in the time-space, which is everything else. Okay, with that in mind, we see that we all have a universal heritage, right, for all of us. This is going to sound very simplistic, but it's very powerful to know. Anybody who can dream is aware, period. That's the most common heritage that we all have. I know that sounds simplistic, of course, everybody knows that, but we need to emphasize that. You see, there's nothing beyond awareness that we can say, oh, we also have that. No, awareness is the first thing that we know, because awareness is how we know things. You see? Infinity became aware of itself. Ah, thus manifestation happened. So, in this state, awareness can have all kinds of experiences. So now, we talk about the structure of the octave. So I'm going to speculate here, but I think this is in line with what Ra says and the Law of One in general. There is the structure, the archetypical mind, which is a universal archetypical mind. You see, as far as we know, mind, body, and spirit, and three archetypes: matrix, potentiator, and significator. That is the beginning of this octave, meaning that every single entity that is in the process of evolving has this structure. So of course our dreams are going to be also in that state. How do I see that? There is, for example, every dream, all dreams, it doesn't matter who we are, whatever density, whatever anything, there needs to be a body, which is the individualized portion. You are the body right here, okay, the center. You're always centered in a dream. You're always experiencing from a point of view. That's the body. Then there is the mind, which is processing this, whatever is happening. You know, there is a processing. There is not a single mind that processes everything. It's just that processing is the mind's job. Being or individualizing yourself is the jobs, the body's job, and then spirit is basically everything, all that is being absorbed by the mind is spirit, and the body itself is spirit. So the more aligned we are with this, then of course, and this is why people who are on this path, they start reporting that in their dreams they carry over, in essence, the same understanding that you develop here. So it starts to filter into your dreams, because you awareness are becoming more aware of your nature, and so you, the preceding aspect of yourself is taking precedence in dreaming and waking state. But you see, how we start formulating the dreams, it's very individual. So that's why they say, to each entity's unique incarnational experience, which is you as your personality develops, there is an overlay to this, to the structure of dreamings, which is universal, that grows to be larger and larger, a larger portion of the dream vocabulary as the entity gains experience. So all of these are informing you. Your mind is becoming more complex for the incarnation, and that reflects of course in the building of the dreams. So the building of the dreams is what we see as symbolic or vocabulary. I would say symbolic, because it's all symbology. It is symbolic about your life, your state of mind, and so many things, but we can go into that. I think it was session 84, around the 80s, there was a dream. You can browse through the sessions and see that there's a couple of them titled Dreams or something related to dreams. You can learn more there. But we can also learn more from question 19. Don says in question 19, thank you. In the last session, you made a statement about the immature male meeting the female with respect to what occurred because of the veil, that the information exchange was quite different. That's what occurred after the veil. This is an example that I'll kind of refresh. Then Don says, would you give an example of the information exchange prior to the veil for this same case, please? Now, just as a refresher, they're talking about the example that Ra gave of the male, the horny male approaching the female only wanting sex, and how the information exchange there was kind of non-relevant to what he actually approached. Like, if I want to have sex, then obviously that's what I want, but I need to put many layers of, hey, what's your name, and all these things that are unimportant to what you desire, you see? So this was the example. I won't go back into it, but Don is asking, in essence, before the veil, I mean, this is after the veil that you have to engage in irrelevant information for what you are, for what you want. We can also see this in business, maybe. You know, you have to shake hands before you hit the guy with a bat in the head. That kind of thing. Like, you have to exchange a lot of superfluous information before getting into, you know, and you can see this in movies when there is some dark dealings. There they can be, you know, a bit more open, which kind of shows a little bit more of honesty and sincerity on thieves and mafiosos who would rather go to the point and say, you know, cut the fluff, let's go down to business. You know, there's no need for formalities here. We know we're dealing in black market stuff. So I guess, you know, it's not representative of being without a veil, but I guess it's comically analogous. So yeah, information that is irrelevant because the veiling process allows this type of catalyst. See, that's catalyst, and that's important. So maybe that's why it's not such a good example. You know, the delinquents that are dealing with criminal stuff. Anyhow, let's see what Ra gives us in terms of pre-veil condition. How would this scenario of two entities that want sex, how would this unfold if they didn't have the veil? Ra says, given this same case, that is the random red ray sexual arousal being activated in both male and female, so both want to have sex, the communication would far more likely have been to the subject of the satisfying of that red ray sexual impulse. When this had occurred, other information such as the naming could be offered with clear perception. It is to be noted that the catalyst which may be processed by the pre-veil experience is insignificant compared to the catalyst offered to the thoroughly bemused male and female after the veil. The confusion, which this situation, simplistic though it is, offers is representative of the efficiency of the enlargement of the catalytic processes occurring after the veiling. So, prior to the veil, there wouldn't be any unnecessary discussion. It would just be satisfying the need for sexual arousal and, you know, whatever it was needed for. Maybe there was a match. You know, there was a clear match in terms of the union of these two entities and exploring and feeling that. Maybe it was understood that, yes, me and you can have a child together and it looks perfect. So let's do it. Let's know there's nothing hidden. Everything is like, we are a perfect match. So let's go to it. Again, like Ross said, it's very simplistic, but we often find that simplistic examples drive the point home. And in this case, again, it's just the lack of necessity for superfluous information being exchanged again. So that's it. That's how it would work prior to the veil. Now, why is it that it's more catalyst for us? Wouldn't it be better if we just go straight to the point with everything? Business, sex, relationships, eating, whatever exchange of information. Wouldn't it be better? Well, the thing is that we don't process, or we don't get any catalyst from that, because it's just, it's almost like being animals. We don't have a way to process. It's not as we were animals, but there is no development. You see, new opportunities don't develop. Maybe, you know, these two, male and female, are attracted and they want to. How many cases do we know this? I mean, in our own lives, we have seen that we have been attracted to somebody. That person was attracted to us, but family, friends, culture, whatever got in the way, and it was just like, okay, nothing can happen. All of this is catalyst. I mean, in other conditions prevail, no catalyst, just goes through it perfectly fine. But this is a learning experience, you see? So it works. And that's what Ross says as the confusion which this situation offers is representative of the efficiency of the enlargement of the catalytic processes occurring to after the veiling. So again, I know it's a very simplistic, like Ross said, example, but I believe it shows, you know, how catalyst is, it's present there. So I hope that makes sense. Let's go to the next question. Don says in question 20, for the condition of the meeting after the veiling process, he's still on the same example or scenario of the male and female encountering each other and wanting to have sex. He says, either entity will choose as a function of its previous biases, or, shall I say, will choose as a function of card 4, the experience, the way in which it will approach or handle the situation with respect to polarity, therefore producing, most probably, more catalyst for itself along the chosen path of polarization. Would Ra comment on that statement? And Ra simply says, the statement is correct. So, one, why are we talking about experience here? Because you can see that there is matrix in both of them. Male and female, matrix and potentiator are at work in what's being presented, right? Depending on the biases that they have, the experience will produce catalyst. And that catalyst can be used for enhancing the experience, because what we seek is polarization. So, sorry, I'm doing a kind of a full description of this these four archetypes of matrix and potentiator present in the meeting of these two entities. They register form and prior biases. I like you. I want this. This is a potentiator informing the matrix, and then the experience itself and catalyst are working together, you see, in this presentation of matrix and potentiator working to produce a need, in this case, red ray, satisfaction, sex. And so this will produce the catalyst that can be used for the person, the specific person, to polarize themselves. So that's what Don is in essence describing, and it's correct. That's just how it works. Depending on how you use now this experience, then of course will polarize you positively, negatively, depolarize you, or just do nothing. But Yes, not all catalyst is fully used, as Ross says. Next question. Question 21, Don says, in card 4 in the last session we spoke of the shape of the skirt, and it has occurred to us that the skirt of the entity representing the archetype of experience is extended to the left to indicate that other selves would not be able to get close to this entity if it had chosen the left-hand path. There would be greater separation between it and other selves, whereas if it had chosen the right-hand path, there would be much less of a separation. Would Ra comment on that observation? Ra loves this and says the student is perceptive. So again, I don't think this is what Ra intended, and yet it's a good observation. I always keep this in mind when I read Ra's answers to Don's question in terms of the archetypical mind. That, I mean, sometimes they do say, that's exactly what we meant. Or this was definitely not intended by us, you know? So we get an idea of what they had in mind to convey as symbols in the archetypes for what they represent. But sometimes there are certain things that Don says and they say, well, yeah, you know, we kind of like that. That's not what we intended, but yeah, it's a good observation. And I think this happens with anything that we interpret in terms of mysticism. You know, as long as it is in the right direction, then sure, that's fine. You know, it's good. And if it's not, then it's pointed as what it's not. It's falsity, you see. So what Don is saying here, that Ra says that this is perceptive, is that in the image, you can see that the skirt is covering more the left side of the entity, meaning that there is greater separation. See, this interpretation can be easily summarized as, if you take the left-hand path, you are on the path of separation, so there is more separation between you and others. That's simple. If you choose the right path, the right-hand path, then there won't be much separation, right? Yes, that's perceptive. There's nothing else to say here. It's just a point that it's very obvious to us now. If you go on the negative side, you're going to feel more separate. Actually, no, let me add this on top of what this means. You can use this as a way to gauge your feelings right now. Your feelings throughout the day. A recurring feeling. And when I say feeling, I mean, how do you feel about your life, about your family, job, relationships, yourself, of course, meditation, entertainment, whatever it is, how do you feel? And if you feel that something is off, then very likely there are thoughts informing you, and you are buying it, of separation. You see? A lot of analysis goes into this because we're always putting under the light what is it that we're feeling and how do we feel about anybody, what is my reaction to things and people, certain topics. The best way to process all of this is, of course, in meditation, to see what's happening in the mind. But again, just wanted to build upon the fact that we can use this understanding that there is, if we feel greater separation, not only between people, but with situations, or we feel kind of apathy, certain things, towards certain things, then we can see that there is more negative thoughts being produced and guiding us, basically. So, something to keep in mind. Question 22, Don says, and it seems that the square upon which the entity sits, which is almost totally black, is a representation of the material illusion, and the white cat is guarding the right-hand path, which is now separated in experience from the left. Would Ra comment on that observation? Here's something to be corrected. Ra says, O student, your sight almost sees that which was intended. However, the polarities need no guardians. What then, O student, needs the guard. And again, I think the problem is on Don, obviously, when he says that the White Cat is guarding the right-hand path. I wouldn't say, well, neither right or left needs guarding. The cat represents something different inside of us. Remember, all of these archetypes, all of them, please don't believe that they are things within you, right? That they're doing certain things. It's just how the mind processes the illusion, especially third density, which is what we're talking about. Archetypical mind is third density. So how does the mind process reality? And how is reality feeding the mind for polarization? That's key, because reality is the material illusion. What we call reality is what we're experiencing, and what we're experiencing is an illusion. Again, I believe all of you are mature enough that I don't have, and when I say mature, I mean spiritually mature, to understand that the illusion doesn't mean a deceit by some higher entities or the evil god and or the impersonator, that kind of stuff. Sometimes I bump into these interpretations of the illusion, and I have to try my best to show that illusion only means playfulness of experience. That's it. Just like a dream is an illusion, imagination is an illusion, and yet it is an experience. So, yeah, that's what it's representing. And that which we're processing, then the White Cat represents something that I'll get to it, because Ra is going to mention it. But I mentioned it already in the last session, not last episode, but session 94, when we discussed this cat, which doesn't look like a cat to me, looks like a mouse or a rat. I'm not sure who drew this. I don't know. But yeah, this cat is not guarding polarities. That's why Ra says polarities need no guardians. But what is the cat guarding? Well, Don gives it another shot and says in question 23, "What I meant to say was that the entity is guarded along the right-hand path once it is chosen from effects of the material illusion that are of a negative polarity." Would Ra comment on that? And now Ra says, "This is an accurate perception of our intent, O student. We may note that the great cat guards in direct proportion to the purity of the manifestations of intention and the purity of inner work done along this path." So this is it. This is the beauty of the protection, the inner protection, which I, again, appropriately titled this video. I believe we're going to still talk more about this, but let me give it a... yes, we're still going to talk more about this, but let me give it a shot at this first to prepare the landscape. When we choose the right-hand path, there is a... Remember, Ra actually mentioned this and said that the Logos, in its design for this experience of third density reality, has biases towards kindness and actually plays a sort of guidepost to show that the right-hand path is the most efficient. Ra recently mentioned this in our series. I don't know if it was in the 90s sessions or in the 80s, but it was very recent. And that bias is to see the right-hand path as more efficient. Well, it so happens that when you choose the right-hand path and you start to move in that direction, then you have greater and greater protection to what Don and Ra are saying that is negative catalyst, is it right, left-hand path catalyst? What are they saying? They say negative polarity, right? Effects of the material illusion that are negative polarity. So this is easy to see. Okay, once you become aware of the right-hand path of unity, this is what I see in most people. Most people are simply attracted to the first recognition out of the confusion, because there is an initial confusion out there that we are separate. We're separate beings, and I need to preserve myself, and all the other problems are generated by the notion, the belief that we are separate beings. Okay. What really triggers the seeker is that we are all one. I yet don't feel it, but we are all one. And that is such a great calling, right? So at the basis of the seeker, there is the notion that we are all one, and I have experiences that have proven that to me. So I'm going to devote my life to the path of unity, the positive path. The more you get into this path, the more you are shielded by, or you're shielded off the negative interactions, or the negative path is always trying to seduce you into separation. This is why Ra says that what the great cat guards is in direct proportion to the purity of the manifestations of intention and the purity of inner work done along this path, which shows that the more you are doing this inner work towards the positive path, in other words, the more you are living this law of one, the more you are living from unity consciousness, which is really what I can compact it in one term, unity consciousness, the more you are living from there, the easier it is for you to dismiss those things that are not true or that would affect you otherwise. And so you build up a sort of resistance, wouldn't be the word, but permeability, probably, because you're not resisting the negative. That's a very important point that I always make, and I said it in the last session, I think it was, where I talked about there's no need to resist the negative or defend yourself against negative entities. It's an immature, granted, sure, for some people, I'm not criticizing or judging, it's just that it's an immature approach. I know it because I've done it, where I feel that I need to defend myself, you know, from negative entities. I am this light being, and those are shadow beings, you know. See how absurd this is? Imagine a beam of light saying, I'm fighting darkness. You're not. I mean, you can play that game if you want, but all you're doing is illuminating that which didn't have anything before. It's you. You're illuminating yourself. So are you fighting yourself? That's the thing. You see how there is still a degree of separation there when people say, and I often find this, you know, I'm battling this through, you know, I'm in the astral planes fighting against demons and that kind of stuff. I mean, sure, maybe that's the interpretation that some people have, and I guess that's fine. But some people take it very serious, you know, and they say enemies are surrounding us, you know, it becomes a little paranoid. And I'm not for any of that nonsense. And when I say nonsense, again, I'm not judging. Everything can be taken like that. But I'm saying that it's just, it's not true. That's not really what's happening. You know, you're not fighting yourself. You wake up from that fighting yourself to realize that, oh, okay, everything is fine. I don't need to put up a defense or anything. So again, the manifestation of intention and the purity of inner work are the two things, right, that increases this sort of permeability, I would say. So things are passing through. So when an insult used to offend you and you would get all worked up and possibly even get to, you know, a fist fight, well, that insult now just you regard it as, I understand your frustration or your madness. I'm here for you, you know. And we begin to see this as a sort of permeability, I would say, not defense. More to say about this. Don says in question 24, from that statement, I interpret the following meaning, that if the experience of the mind has sufficiently chosen the right-hand path, as total purity is approached in choosing of the right-hand path, then total imperviousness from the effect of the left-hand catalyst is also approached. Is this correct? Ra says, this is exquisitely perceptive. The seeker, which has purely chosen the service to others' path, shall certainly not have a variant apparent incarnational experience. There is no outward shelter in your illusion from the gusts, flurries, and blizzards of quick and cruel catalyst. However, to the pure, all that is encountered speaks of the love and the light of the one infinite creator. The cruelest blow is seen when an ambience of challenges offer and opportunities to come. Thusly, the great pitch of light is held high above such an one, so that all interpretation may be seen to be protected by light. Very symbolic, everything that Ra is saying here. Again, Don is bringing it to the absolute perception of liberation, and says that the experience of the mind, once it has chosen the right-hand path and approach purity, right, then it would be totally impervious to the effects of left-hand catalysts, or in essence, invitations to separation, invitations to anger, invitations to negative emotions, everything negative, everything that is under the umbrella of negative behaviors. Well, obviously, this is true. The more positive you are, the less room there is for negativity. In polarization, we see this. You're 51%, great, you graduated, but you have another 49%. Are you going to do it here, or are you going to wait for fourth density? Well, it so happens that we don't have a meter for this. So we can only speculate that it's about negative thoughts that you have and negative behaviors and all of this. So, well, we enter purification process, you know, Buddhists, Christians, Sufis, they're all on this path, always looking what can be ameliorated from these negative behaviors that we simply have. You know, it's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. We bought into the illusion. So what? We're cleaning it now. Now that we are aware. Like I said in my analogy, you get into your room and you finally realize after months that you haven't cleaned it and it's all a mess. And you say, all right, well, fine. There's nothing wrong. I don't need to burn the room. I don't need to defend myself against unorganized piles of clothes and shoes and whatever it is. No, I just need to put myself to work and organize things. So, yes, you become sort of impervious over time, and that speaks of a higher percentage of polarity. To me, I'm not putting words in Ra's mouth, but that's how I see it. This is why Ra says, okay, the seeker which has purely chosen the service to others' path shall certainly have no apparent variety in the incarnational experience. Of course, everything that it will see this is beautiful. It means that you're not going to be able to, catalyst is still going to happen, right? It's not like you're going to immaculate yourself somehow and you're not going to face catalyst. It's just that the catalyst that you face is going to be processed, like they say, right? To the pure, all that is encountered speaks of the love and the light of the one infinite creator. So the more you begin to polarize, the more you're going to see that love. And like I said in the example of somebody insulting you and you used to be offended by it and get into a fist fight, you know, now you don't get into a fist fight, but you start to, you begin to, you continue to be offended by it, right? So yes, that is how it works. And of course, the more you become clear about this, the more you're going to see these opportunities to show up. That's why they say, thusly, the great pitch of light is held high above such an one, so that all interpretation may be seen to be protected by light. It's beautiful. Even the cruelest blows are seen as an ambience of challenges, offer and opportunities to come. So yes, it's a beautiful way to understand this path. Let's move to the next question. Question 25, Don says, I have often wondered about the action of random and program catalysts with respect to the entity with a very strong positive or negative polarization. Would one or either be free to a great extent from random catalysts occurring, such as great natural catastrophes or warfare or something like that, that generates a lot of random catalysts in the physical vicinity of a highly polarized entity? Does this great cat have the effect on such random catalysts upon the right-hand path? So, really good question here. Ra says, in two circumstances, this is so. Firstly, if there has been the pre-incarnative choice that, for instance, one shall not take life in the service of the cultural group, events shall fall in a protective manner. Secondly, if any entity is able to dwell completely in unity, the only harm that may occur to it is the changing of the outward physical yellow ray vehicle into the more light-filled mind-body-spirit complexes vehicle by the process of death. All other suffering and pain is as nothing to one such as this. We may note that this perfect configuration of the mind-body and spirit complexes while within the third density vehicle is extraordinarily rare. So, really good question here, because Don is saying, okay, imagine we have a very strong positive or negatively polarized being, right? Would one or either be free to from the catalyst of natural disasters, warfare, and stuff like that, right? Things that we consider to be random. I don't know that this is a good definition of random catalysts. I've always seen random catalysts as something that you are unaware of. Like, for example, if you're an unconscious being, things are seemingly random, but there are just opportunities for you to choose. That's how I see it. So I wouldn't put into the bag of random catalysts just these seemingly things that happen outside of us. I don't like it. Great natural catastrophes, warfare, and so on. I think random catalyst more as something that is, you know, just you're unaware of it. You're unaware of where it's coming from. See, it's coming from the unconscious, and you don't know about it. In any case, that's not the biggest point here. The point is if somebody who is highly polarized has an effect on that catalyst, on the right-hand path. He now reverts to the right-hand path. I guess the question is not about both, even though he mentioned positive and negative polarization, but asking more about the positive one at the end. So, okay, Ra says that there are two circumstances. The first one is when there has been the pre-incarnative choice that you will not engage in social activities or cultural group. Like, there is a pre-incarnative choice that you're not going to be involve in society, then yeah, the events shall fall in a protective manner, meaning that your own mental configuration would lead you to, I guess, isolation here. And in isolation, there is, you know, no such thing as these big events happening around you. That seems to me like the sort of program mind that only comes here to be isolated, like the private Buddha, we would say in Buddhism, the Pratyeka Buddha. But the second one is in which it doesn't matter where you are. And I think this applies also to the first one, but the first one doesn't necessarily need to be like the second one. The second one is dwelling completely in unity. Now that's something, right? Some people, and I don't like this, I don't like even what Ross says, that which is not their fault, they're just being thorough here. But to say that, you know, this is extraordinarily rare can be discouraging for a lot of us, to say, I'm never going to reach that purity, so why should I even try? That's the wrong attitude, because it so happens that this dwelling completely in unity can be for a fraction of a second during the day. It may not happen for days, it happens a fraction of a second. Then, you know, that opens up our curiosity to keep seeking that, to keep seeking to stay in that state. And the more you try, well, the more you dwell there. And so, you know, it's very uncommon for sages to reach that point, yes, but it's not about reaching that point. And I think the Law of One has offered us a great, I would say, very realistic view of what it means to be, you know, in harmony with yourself. As long as you're 51% or so above that, you're fine, you know. And this is not about making the grade, it's about you feeling fine. So the more you harmonize yourself, the better, of course, you will feel. But given that example, as Ra is saying, yes, somebody who dwells completely in unity, the only harm, and I put this in my quotes, the only harm that can happen is to the physical body, basically death. And even that is something that happens blissfully. All other suffering and pain is as nothing to one such as this. Somebody comes in mind, yes, the man who was crucified 2,000 years ago. He represents this. Suffering and pain, nothing to one such as this. In fact, I believe that's what he meant in the, I forgot which gospel. He says, it's one of the Gnostic gospels, or yeah, those gospels that were included in the canon Bible. That's when he said, the man that you're going to see sacrifice tomorrow is not me, so relax, he told the disciples. You know, because what you're going to see is just a shell, you know, a body. A body feels pain, yes, and it's going to react. It's going to be bloody, and you know, the nerves are going to cause scream and all these things. Not everybody, of course, because we know, for example, Buddhists who have immolated themselves, and not a single, you know, expression of pain. So were they repressing it? I don't think you can repress those things at that stage. I think you're just fully independent from pain. But again, that's the highest being. So we may know that this perfect configuration is basically, well, very rare. So yeah, I at least I would just take this for us as it's a path, it's a gradual path. And the more you step into it, the better, of course, you feel, and less pain you feel, suffering, and so on. Let's move to the next question. Don says in question 26, am I to understand then that there is no protection at all if the experience of the mind has become negative and the negative path is traveled? All random catalysts may affect the negatively polarized individual as a function of the statistical nature of the random catalyst. Is this correct? Ra says, this is correct. You may note some of those of your peoples which, at this space-time nexus, seek places of survival. This is due to the lack of protection when service to self is invoked. Here we have a better glimpse in terms of what protection means. Because people initially might feel like, oh, if I'm positive, then I will create a sort of bubble around me that when there's an earthquake, kind of like the ceiling is going to collapse on the bubble and not hurt me. That's the type of protection I have. That happens when you play too many video games, like I have done. People tend to believe that that's the sort of protection, that you won't be affected by anything, disease or anything. All sages have died of normal disease, cancer including that, right? Like Nisargadatta Maharaj, who died of throat cancer. We are all humans. We're all going to be interacted by nature, let's say. It's not affected, like, you know, you die pristinely. Some people may die like that. Most of us will die normally, like all other sentient beings. So no, the type of protection that Ra is talking about here is a protection in which there's nothing that can affect you. See, you're not protecting yourself from something external to you, but nothing is external to you. Simply, everything is, and you're fine with whatever it is. You have cancer consuming you, that's fine. You know, let it happen. I'm not sure why it's happening. It's happening. If I can get healed, then I'll heal, but I'm not going to go out of my way to do it. I guess I'm not very eloquent on putting this into words, but protection is knowing that you're fine, knowing who you are as awareness, and knowing that everything that's happening in mind and body is ephemeral, transient. It's changing itself. So why do I extrapolate this? Because Ra is saying that you may see those negatives. Of course, we're discussing the answer about negatives being still, let's say, victims of their own fears. And so Ra gives the example of those in the 80s who are seeking places of survival. What was happening in the 80s? The Cold War, nuclear disaster. We built bunkers under the mountains and so on, so we can live there for however many years. But guess what? It wasn't the people of the country that were going to be saved there. You know, like in Lord of the Rings, when they put them in second movie, Two Towers, when they put him in the, I forgot the name of the caves. Any of you nerd of the rings, remember the name of the cave in Helm's Deep, where they put all the women and children, and that was it. They saved them there. No, that wasn't going to happen. It was going to be those who built the caves and the underground bunkers and stocked them with food for however long. So, you know, a positive being would look at a nuclear bomb and say, hooray, you know, great. I'm not dying here. I don't need to survive. Everything's fine. You know, you're not going to be freaking out about your life because you're not freaking out about anything that can be lost. As A Course in Miracles says, nothing real can be threatened. Therein lies the peace of God. It says more. It says, nothing unreal exists. So, that's it. That's how the Course in Miracles can be summarized. You can close the book, give it away, or use it as a prompt for your couch. That's it. Oh, that's all you need to know. If you can understand this, if you can integrate it within yourself. And so, yes, that is due to the lack of protection when service itself is invoked. Well, service itself is, I am a being and I need to protect myself, and at the very end I need to exploit as much as possible for my own benefit until I die. You see, because when I die, then, you know, I have become aware that I can continue my life as a separate being. And so you go on to fourth density and you reach a ceiling at some point, which is sixth density, mid-sixth density, and say, huh, all for nothing. So we can do this here. We can do this here in third density and say, oh, yes, all of this survival and keeping myself is for nothing. Let me just dissolve in the beauty of unity. We are approaching the last question. Let's cover it. Question 27, Don says, the possibility of the legs of the entity of card 4 being at approximate right angles was linked with the tesseract mentioned in a much earlier session by Ra. As the direction of the transformation from space-time into time-space, and I was thinking that possibility, that possibly it was also linked with the crooks and Sata. Am I in any way correct with this observation? We got a little abstract here. Ra says, this shall be the last query of this working as transferred energy wanes. The observation of the right angles and their transformational meaning is most perceptive, O student. Each of the images leading to the transformations of mind, body, and spirit, and ultimately to the great transformative choice, has the increasing intensity of increasing articulation of concept. That is to say, each image is in which you find this angle may increasingly be seen to be a more and more stridently calling voice of opportunity to use each resource, be it experience as you now observe or further images, from the grand work of the adept which builds towards transformation using the spirit's bountiful shuttle to intelligent infinity. This is very long and I would say deep answer by Ra, which I confess I don't have the full comfort to interpret all at once. But in any case, we're talking about the legs on the card being in a right angle, right? They're crossed, so they're at a right angle. And in that right angle, now Don puts in the abstract of the tesseract, which is, if you grab a square and you extend it by all angles, you get a cube, right? But a cube represented in two dimensions, like a paper or a whiteboard like I have in the back, it's not a cube. It's the shadow of a cube. A cube needs to be appreciated in three dimensions. And fun fact, we humans don't experience three dimensions. Third dimension is always illusory. Ah, third density illusion. There's no connection there, at least not directly, but it's true. We never experience three dimensions. We always experience two dimensions. But there is the illusion of depth, which we do perceive and kind of process with our bodies, but it's never there. You always see the world in flat. You know, it's like a spherical flat all around us. It's a pseudo 3D. But, you know, we can experience that. We can move a cube and say, this is a cube. Although you never see a cube from all angles. That would be looking at it from the fourth dimension. And not that I wish to linger too much here, but I get this idea that we're moving into 5D. Well, it's not fifth density, it's fourth density. But people talk about 5D because we are moving away from the three dimensions of space and one of time. So we live in four dimensions. So people say we're going to move into 5D or 5D. In any case, it's a confusion that a lot of people have, and it's only because we speak of densities here and they speak of dimensions there. Both, I guess, are right. I just don't know of any model that produces the five densities, the five dimensions as a way to understand spiritual evolution. So I don't pay attention to that. In any case, that's the tesseract. The tesseract is the cube, but now extended to all angles outwardly. And so we can see a shadow in 3D of this. We can build a model of a tesseract, just like we can build a cube or draw a cube in paper or a whiteboard, but never experience it. That's the tesseract. It's a fourth dimensional cube, if you will. That's a tesseract. So how did Don connect all of this? I am assuming that it's because a tesseract goes beyond this dimension. And so all the archetypes or the archetypical structure of the mind is to move forward into that transcendence of dimensions and densities and so on. So Ra likes this and says, oh, that's pretty good, right? The observation of the right angles and their transformational meaning is most perceptive, O student. That's how I see it. I mean, like I explained, you cannot see a tesseract. You can see its shadow, much like you can see the shadow of a cube. If I project it with light, right? You see the shadow and you say, oh, it looks like a cube, but it's not a cube. It's just squares or lines. It's not even a square. Well, you can see a square there. But that's it. It's not a cube. Just the same way we can see a tesseract here and say, oh, look, that's a tesseract. But no, that's the shadow of a tesseract. Tesseract, we cannot even imagine it because we would need four dimensions or five dimensions. It depends on who you talk to. If they want to include time, time is not necessary here. We're only talking about space. It gets boring. But the point is that that represents transcendence, I believe, right? And so Ra likes that and says, each of the images leading to the transformations of mind, body, and spirit, and ultimately to the great transformative choice, has the increasing intensity of increasing articulation of concept. What it means? I don't know. Each of the cards, each of the archetypes has the possibility of intensifying that articulation of the concept, okay? That is to say, each image in which you find this angle, so if we look at the images and we find that angle, can increasingly be seen to be a more and more stridently calling voice of opportunity to use each resource. So maybe the images inspire a lot this seeking in this direction of transformation and ultimately, of course, transcendence, which is the purpose of the archetypical mind. And so they say, this voice is calling to you, be it experience as you now observe it, or further images. Oh, they're going beyond here. It's not even the cards themselves. They're going to experience as you now observe. Oh, no. Okay, they're going into the archetypical mind still. Experience, that's why experience has a capital E. Right. Whether that be experience, the card as you see it, or other images, for the grand work of the adepts, which builds towards transformation using the spirit's bountiful shuttle to intelligent infinity. Man, let me tell you, this again can be unpacked in different ways, but I'm just going to be satisfied by saying that you can look at these images, and if you see the inspiration, anybody can look at it and say, all right, that's a man with legs crossed. Somebody like Don would say, I associate it with a tesseract. And then that association invites, you know, to see, oh, it goes to transcendence, just like the Kruxansata, sacrifice, and the nature, the cyclical nature of manifestation, duality, and all these things. I mean, we just get inspired by these images to include this in our lives and say, yes, include this in our minds. So our minds begin to process things in a way that is more consonant with our chosen path. Conclusions. That's all I got today. So we discussed the inner work briefly when we talk about the great protection. I'm just going to build upon that and say that we have this capacity for seeing now things clearer because everything that we have experienced and shows us that reality is about unity. And unity feels like connection, love, in its so many expressions, which is to create space for the other person. First, you need to create space for yourself, to accept yourself, to allow yourself to be, to accept others and allow them to be. All of this is the positive path. The more you live from these natural callings of the human, I wouldn't even say these are like suggestions by Ra or by a specific religion. It's just natural in all of us. We want to see people happy because we are ourselves happy. The more happy you are, the happier you are, the happier people are around you. So again, simplistic but equally important in this path, which is just to allow things to be. That's all I got today. We finished session 95. Next sessions, I believe, are going to be short, in relatively speaking. I'm starting to think that, yes, about June or July, it's going to be the end of this series, and I have other things in mind that, of course, are going to continue to be in this channel. I hope you're well. I'll be letting you know about these things, and with nothing else to say, have a good day or good night, whatever you are. And I'll see you in session 96, first part.